Yeah.
And we return with Cross for Mr. Hill.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hill. I'm Tadas Casilius on behalf of the city, and I have just a couple questions for you. I'd like to start with where you started, and I think you were describing your perception of the land use impacts, and you're making the distinction both inside and outside of the urban village, and you're describing the label you used was a double up zone, and I think you're also describing the distinction I think you're making is where you're changing the map as opposed to where you're just changing the text. And I thought I heard you say in response to Ms. Newman's question about if you found any of that in the IS, I thought I heard you say, none of that is in here that I have found. So I guess I wanted to just make sure I understood that correctly. Was it your testimony that the EIS doesn't touch those subjects at all anywhere in the document?
I think her question to me was, have you found anything that describes how these two sections of Wallingford, inside and outside, will be impacted?
Okay. So that was your statement was specific to that distinction. Okay.
And the notion of double upzone came from a young woman who went to a hearing, to a public meeting, and stood up and said, that's like a double upzone. So not my words, just...
No, I appreciate it. And the distinction, again, you're making there with the double upzone is one in which you're changing the map, and what you're changing it to also has different standards.
The development standards are changing, yes. Okay.
And so just to be clear, I understand the distinction and your testimony is more narrow. Do you agree that the EIS discusses that aspect of the proposal?
I don't think – I didn't find where it was making a clear distinction in terms of the impacts one versus the other.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to draw your attention to figure 3.3-2, and I'll give you a page number in just a second. I have to find it myself. I apologize.
So is it Exhibit 3.3?
No, it's I'm sorry. It's Exhibit 2, so it's the EIS.
Established single family. It's 3.163.
Yes, on page. Thank you.
Just reading the...
I'm sorry. Yes.
You see where it's...
I see where you're going.
Okay.
So, yes, we're all there. I'm finally there now. 3.163. Now, I want to focus first on established single-family housing areas, because I heard you testify about the last sentence, about front yards with setbacks 10 to 15 feet, and you've made the distinction, I think, that that didn't reflect your neighborhood.
In Wallingford, it's more like 20, 25 feet.
Okay. And then I think I heard you say that the entirety of that paragraph doesn't describe Wallingford. I think you said not at all. Is that your testimony, that the rest of this paragraph doesn't describe Wallingford as not accurate?
Well, that's true, too.
I'm sorry.
For example.
Could you pause for just for 1 second? I need to be able to finish the question before you can start answering, just for purposes of the record. So the distinction I'm trying to ask you to make is it just that it's the setback piece that is not accurate for your neighborhood, or is it the entirety of the paragraph that does not reflect Wallingford at all? And maybe what I'll have you do is to walk through. So the first sentence says, established single-family areas are common in portions of the study area currently zoned single-family residential and urban villages. So does Wallingford have established single-family areas where that zoning is in place?
Yes.
Most single-family areas in Seattle have an established pattern of single-family homes. Is that accurate for Wallingford?
Yes.
And the ages of the existing housing stock often span several decades. Is that consistent with Wallingford?
It's probably the low side, particularly in the next sentence. It's more like 100
okay.
50.
I'm sorry. I didn't understand the distinction you're making there.
They're 100 years old.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Typical.
So you're saying the several decades is not representative enough.
I think it suggests, it's like 20 or 30 years.
Okay. A typical block often has many homes with an age of 50 years or older. Is that accurate?
It's older, although the way it's phrased makes it doesn't really capture what I think of as the neighborhood.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at here is your testimony was that this does not reflect Wallingford at all, or your words. And so what I'm hearing is it's a little bit more nuanced, and I'm trying to explore that a little bit more. So when you said it doesn't reflect it at all, I'm now hearing you say, well, it could have been changed to be a little more reflective.
Objection. I'm not sure you're characterizing his witness, his testimony from my direct accurately. So if you could.
Did you say that this paragraph does not reflect Wallingford at all?
I think I'll go with that still. Yeah.
Okay.
If I was writing the paragraph to reflect Wallingford, the first sentence is fine and the second sentence is fine, but after that, it's not really reflective of Wallingford.
So the distinctions here you're making in the sentences we just discussed, are those incorrect or could they have been dialed in more precisely?
The one about the age could have been dialed in more precisely. It's not correct. And the one about the setbacks is clearly incorrect.
So it's not correct when you said most of them are 100 years old, that it's to say 50 years or older. That's incorrect in your mind?
Yeah, because it's characterizing how old are the buildings, and the buildings are more than not are 100 years old.
Okay. And just to clarify where we started with this, you said the setbacks in Wallingford are further than 10 to 15 feet. Is that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And that's important because when you're weighing these new changes where they'll be 5 feet, that makes a huge difference in the streetscape.
I had a question for you about the images in Exhibit 3.3, and that starts on page 3.178. You testified to several of these. I had a really precise question. I just wanted to make sure I understood what you were saying. You made a characterization about trees that were missing from one image to the next, and I just want to make sure I understood what you were referring to. So do you recall that testimony?
Yes.
So can you give me an example?
Later image.
Okay.
Let's look at the first image since we're here.
Sure.
3.178.
Okay.
So the two things that are distinct here is, on the right-hand side, just above the dog, is a building that's projecting out past all the others. And you wouldn't see that in existing single family.
Are you referring to the one that's in gold?
Well, I have a black and white version. So
you don't see the colors in your.
What page are we on?
3.179.
178.
And 178.
Yeah.
Okay, so on 178, are you referring to the one that's in blue or white?
This one on the right, immediately above where the dog is. So there's a guy with a dog.
If you want to use the exhibit two, that might be.
So was your testimony on the differences between those pictures based on your black and white copy?
No, I had the color one too. I just didn't bring it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess there's a blue building on the right-hand side.
Is that the one you were just referring to as sticking out further?
Yes.
Okay.
And on the left-hand side, those...
Can I just interrupt you for a second? What is your understanding of what's shown in blue there?
Well, it says single family, no zoning, no action. So I would assume that's a single family house or intended to be one.
Do you understand the distinction between the blue and the white in that image?
No.
Do you think it's important to understand that to testify about what that's depicting?
I think the average person that looks at this is just seeing what's going on here. They're not necessarily reading everything that's in here and then transporting it back into the image.
Okay.
They're just looking at the image.
Let's go back to the tree. I just wanted to understand again what you were referring to as what was missing, and I want to focus specifically on.
So there's a tree on the left-hand side of the, there's a conifer behind the blue building on the left. And then if you fast forward to page 181, see that tree is in both the images there. And it looks to me like it would be within the range of those lots that are being shown in orange now. And so you wouldn't see trees based on what we're seeing.
And just to make, I'm sorry, I just want to make sure I'm understanding the testimony. I'm going back to 3.178. There's sort of what I'll call an opaque tree at the foreground.
There's an opaque tree, but there's what I would say was a conifer that's green in front of the opaque tree, perhaps behind it, I guess behind it.
You're talking about the outlines of trees, but the actual trees that you've drawn in behind the structures. Is that correct, to the left of the image?
Yes.
You're talking about to the left, not the right? Earlier I heard you say above the dog, so I was focused
on
the right.
That's different.
Okay.
That building is just, it's the building that's out.
Okay.
On the left-hand side of the image, just to the left of the orange building in the upper or lower image, there's a conifer sticking out there.
And is that, you're saying that's not shown in 3.181?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, give you an example. This is what we see in new projects. You wouldn't see a big tree left behind.
I was focused on what you were comparing. I was trying to understand which picture you said was not depicted in the later images, and I'm still not understanding that.
So, in the images on 181, which uh-huh. depict low rise one, mm-hmm. two different versions,
mm-hmm.
And then it says lower is two on the right. But let's look at the left. So there's a conifer tree, green, sparse limbs sticking up behind the yellow buildings. And I'm just saying, based on where it is, it most likely would be in one of the developed lots. And if it was in one of those developed lots, it wouldn't be there anymore. And there wouldn't be any space for it to grow either.
So that's based on your assumption that somebody would clear the lot. I now understand. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. Let's look at your photographs, which is Exhibit 249, I think.
162?
Yes, that would be the internal reference, yeah. Examiners marked it at 249 for the big record. I want to start from the end, the last four photographs, and then move forward. Well, first, you said in response to Ms. Newman's testimony, not precise measurements. You yourself called it crude. Can you describe again how you, and I'm just focused on height, how you figured out how tall to draw that building on page 14 to demonstrate that it is 55 feet high plus living building of 10 feet?
Yeah, so first of all, there is a building. If you go back to 13, you'll see there's an actual building there.
Okay.
And I have the drawings for that building, so I know exactly how tall that building is. And I know that the street light just to the right of that building is 30 feet. So that's how we figured out how high that building was. And then it's just a question of scaling up.
So that's my question. So it's not that the building that you've put in on page 14 is in the precise location of the existing building, is it?
It actually is. It is.
Well, I guess I'm still seeing the overhang.
Well, that's because you've got a canopy.
Uh-huh.
The canopy is on the burger place, and it sticks out. So two things happening. There's a one-story burger joint on the corner.
Okay.
And then behind that is a multifamily building. And we used the multifamily building for the height. And it's actually on the back side, if you will, of our image. So we've plunked this image on top of the burger place.
But
we've used the multifamily building, which we know the height of, to scale the height of the new building.
So how'd you scale the front corner? Because they're in different locations. One is closer to the camera than the other.
Yeah, but so you establish a vanishing point. There are a lot of lines on all these buildings. And if you take all these lines out on both sides, you arrive at a vanishing point.
Let me ask you, though.
And then you take that off the existing building.
You had testified that you had not done this work.
No. I figured out how high to make it.
Okay.
But the actual image here was done by Don.
Okay. What assumptions did you make about, now I'm talking about the form, and this is on both pages 14 and 16. Mm-hmm. There are these blocks that you've put in. So what assumptions did you make about the structures when making those, beyond just the height? What did you assume for setbacks?
We assumed 5 feet.
Okay, and
minimum.
And can you describe again your understanding of what MHA does to setbacks in the low-rise zones?
I believe the setbacks are 5 foot minimum.
Compared to existing zoning, I think you testified that there's a change that you're aware of.
The existing zoning today is 5 feet as well.
Okay.
The buildings that are down there today were built under the old code, so they're actually further back.
Okay. So you assumed 5 foot setbacks. You said in particular relation, you pointed out on page 14 that the building on the east side to the left of the page had an upper level setback. And I thought I heard you say you assumed that would not be the case for the one that you put in.
Yeah, so they had an upper level setback because of the power lines.
Okay.
There's actually a cone, circle, if you will, around the power lines. And they had to set it back. Also, the design review board was pushing them because the Wallingford design guidelines say set the upper level back, and that's what happened on that Egypt project. They set those back. Mm-hmm. So there was both a technical reason to set it back, power line easement, as well as the design review guideline. So the developer was, you know, magnanimous in saying, oh, we'll set it back, because he knew he had to. We didn't realize that at the time. But.
And is it your testimony that that would not occur under MHA, that there wouldn't be an upper level setback?
The power line, that power line ends down there, so I don't think it would necessarily apply.
And the design guidelines themselves would not apply?
The design guidelines, depending on the size of the building. So the current design review has been collapsed on itself. The goal is to only do half as many buildings. So the building has to be a lot bigger. It's no longer the number of units. So you can have a gazillion little tiny units. It doesn't count. It's just square footage that counts. That was the SOP to people that build really tiny units, because they're kind of getting hurt by some of these other things that are happening here. So everybody has to have a piece of the pie, right, from the development side. So in our case here, we don't have any authority. The design review guidelines, up to the board to determine what to do. For example, on Stone Way, there's a project that's on Stone Way. It's a mixed-use project. It's a NC2 zone, 40 feet high, but the ground falls away. So the way they do the zoning, it can be 5 stories on the backside, next to single family. The single family people were all upset about that. Let me finish.
I'm sorry, you're deviating from the question. I'm really focused on upper level setbacks, and I think you're testifying about a different thing to which
you're
testifying. No,
I'm going to tell you exactly how it works, because you asked about design review. In that project and design review, we sat down with the developer before the design review meeting, and he agreed to pull his parapet back from the edge to decrease the bulk of the building. During design review, the board said, no, that's part of MHA. That's going to be something else in the future. We don't have to worry about those single-family people, so keep that parapet up there where we have it. So design review doesn't necessarily get you anything, even when you have the developer agreeing with you. The design review board can overrule that.
So let me ask you, outside of the design guidelines, is it your testimony that there wouldn't be any requirement for upper level setbacks?
That's correct.
Okay.
It depends on whether it's the front or the rear of the building. It's complicated. There are some, and I can't remember whether it's in the commercial or the residential, there are some additional side setbacks depending on how tall the building is.
Okay. Let's go to Paige. Ms. Newman asked you to read the Wallingford specific description of the land use impacts. I'll give you a page number in just a second here. Okay, I believe she referred you to
3.123. Okay.
I recall you were testifying and you were expressing a question as to why specific areas in low-rise multifamily, those specific areas were called out. Do you remember your testimony? You read the second sentence and it called out some specific areas.
Yeah, the south fringe of 47th, mm-hmm. east this, west of that, so forth. Yes.
And in answering your question, I noticed you were referring to Exhibit 247, that map right there. Mm-hmm. Is it your understanding that this paragraph refers to that map?
Well, the paragraph refers to Wallingford. It refers to streets. It doesn't say anything about the map that I can see.
Okay, so let's...
But if I look at the map, mm-hmm. for example, on 47th Street, which happens to be where I live, both the north and the south sides are to be rezoned to LR2. 40-foot high.
Okay.
So why would you only call out the south side here? I'm clueless. You know, I don't understand what it's talking about. So that goes to the point that it's not really necessarily Wallingford who dreamed this up, or were they really looking at Wallingford? I'm at a loss. I don't know.
I'm going to ask you to pause for a second while I find another reference for you here. Actually, while I'm doing that, if you could page back to 3.119. If I was to tell you the heading there, impacts of alternative 2, and if I told you that the paragraph you were just referring to was reflective of alternative 2, and then if I asked you to turn to page...
Now this is a hypothetical question?
Well, I could ask you to read it. I'm trying to be efficient here in time and get you out of here in a speedy way. Let me do it this way. Can you turn to please...
We have time, Council. So
okay. Could you please turn... There's part of Exhibit 2 is the appendices of the EIS. It should be there as well. And I'm going to ask you to refer to Exhibit H.
In here.
Yes, it should be part of Exhibit 2.
Wait.
You're talking about
you mean Appendix H?
Yes.
You said Exhibit H.
Excuse
appendix?
Me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I meant the appendix to the EIS. It's Exhibit 2 up there in the binder, but it's Appendix H.
And are we keeping 3.119? And
yes. Thank you. I was going to try
1.123.
Yes. Thank you. I know that's hard. I apologize.
I just don't want to close it and lose it.
And let me know when you get to Appendix H.
Got it.
I'm going to ask you to page. Do you see at the bottom there's a page number? It starts with H, and then it's got the number behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Could you please go to H78? You can let me know when you're there.
Okay.
And can you read now, sort of midway up the page to the left of it, there's a title. It says Exhibit H77, Proposed Zoning Alternative 2.
Okay.
So if you were knowing what you know about the neighborhoods that are called out in the description that you read on page 3.123 of the EIS, could you testify whether those specific locations are shown on this in a different way than the areas around them?
Which number are we on now?
I'm comparing, so this can get confusing. Page H78, it's exhibit H77. It's the alternative two.
Okay.
So I'm going to, so you don't have to page back and forth. I'm going to read to you the description from 3.123.
No, I can see. So what he's saying is, in this alternative two map, the north side of the street is RSL, and the south side of the street is L1, maybe.
And so when that specific paragraph in 3.123 calls out that specific location, is that reflected in the map on H77?
I'll give you that on 47th.
Okay.
I'm going to go through each one of these.
How about the west frontage of Meridian?
Well, you know, Meridian runs through a whole lot of things. I guess what it includes things on both sides. So I think on that one, it's kind of hopeless to figure out.
Okay.
It's true at one point on the east side of Meridian, there's a park. It's also true that on the east side of the Meridian, there's multifamily, there's commercial, there's all sorts of things.
I guess what you testified your understanding of what the notation means there, you know, the existing zoning followed by the line followed by the proposed zoning. And so we're focused here. The paragraph was describing existing single-family zoning in transition areas at the edges of neighborhood commercial corridors would be changed to low-rise multifamily. So we're focused on ones that are currently single-family that are being changed to low-rise. And so in light of that limiting piece, do you see the part of west frontage of Meridian Avenue North that's called out in that map? And is that reflected in the paragraph that you read earlier?
Can you describe what called out? I just want to object that it's confusing what you mean by called out.
I guess I'm not sure if there's an objection on the grounds of confusion if the witness can answer.
Do you understand what he means by called out?
Well, there is a portion of Meridian that has L1 on the west side.
And is that stretch there currently single family based on the notation in the map?
Yes.
Okay. Now you said Meridian goes through other sections where a lot of different sections. Are any of those currently single family that are not reflected there?
Well, I'm not sure about the 43rd in Meridian, but I don't think it's...
Is 43rd in Meridian being zoned to LR in that map?
No.
Okay.
So you're basically saying this language with west of Meridian and single family changed to low rise.
I guess I don't want to be saying anything. You're the witness. But the question I'd like to ask you is, does that paragraph that you read before that confused you make more sense now if it relates to this map?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just have sort of a bigger question for you. You finished with a statement about, I think the quote I wrote down was, let me step back. You were talking about what may be built or may not be built. And the quote I wrote down was, of course you can predict. And so I just have a question for you. Can you predict at this point exactly where structures will be built?
If somebody bought a parcel, I think you could predict pretty carefully, pretty close to what would happen there.
If somebody bought a parcel.
If somebody bought a parcel and was going to redevelop it, if the rules are clear.
Do you know when somebody's going to buy a parcel in the next 20 years?
No, in fact, that's one of the issues here. But so what I'm saying is the notion that you can't predict, we're rezoning everything. We have no idea what the hell's going to happen. That's not a very good position to be in, is it? And it seems to me that, in fact, it is possible to predict fairly accurately.
Is it your impression that the EIS says we have no idea what's going to happen?
I think it's used as a crutch to avoid disclosing what really is going to happen.
Do you know what housing types, what structures will be built? Can you predict precisely what will occur, assuming you know where something will be built?
So based on what we've seen in the neighborhood, it's, I think, reasonably a tight envelope, depending on what zone you're in.
Okay.
And today in L2, you can pretty much predict it's going to be townhouses. In the future, if it becomes 40 feet, then it's probably not going to be townhouses, or they'll be very expensive townhouses, which is also possible.
That was specific to LR2?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay.
I know everyone wants to eat lunch.
We can do redirect. That's okay. Why we took the 5-minute break.
So okay. Okay, great. Thanks.
And we'll do a late
lunch.
I'll
do it very quickly.
Yep.
Mr. Hill, those pictures in Exhibit 249 showing the view impacts. The general purpose of those, as you said before, was that to be precise, to actually demonstrate what the exact view impacts will be? Did you do your own study, or are you just trying to show a general concept of what the EIS didn't do, and the fact that there are views in Wallingford that should have been analyzed by the EIS?
So the EIS did not provide us with any visual cue on some of these situations, such as
view impacts. Is there any analysis of Wallingford specific view impacts in the EIS?
The only part I saw in the EIS on views was the discussion of the city has a policy of view impacts, and it's very limited.
Okay.
From specific places to specific things. And none of those specific places are in an area that would be redeveloped in Wallingford. So it's not applicable.
All right. And then looking at the aesthetics chapter, where we're looking at the established single-family housing areas on page 3.163, there's one paragraph there that describes single-family areas. And as I think we've established, this is just a basically describing single-family housing areas throughout the whole city. That's not specifically an attempt to describe Wallingford. Is that how you read that? It's not focused on Wallingford specifically.
Can you start the question?
Okay. So do you read that paragraph? Well, let me start over. Let's say you're a council member and you are making decisions on how to zone, upzone within the Wallingford Urban Village. You want to make those choices. And you have in front of you, you know, a choice of how to zone all over this area. And the law requires that the SEPA analysis, the EIS, provide you with information about the existing buildings, existing characters, existing aesthetic, and what the existing single-family areas look like in Wallingford.
Objection.
Does this...
Objection. The question has embedded in it a legal argument and conclusion.
I don't see anything objectionable about that. I'm just asking him to assume something.
What's the legal argument?
I'm just...
The level of specificity that SEPA requires in the product that she's showing.
So I'm just saying, let's say that the law requires that as a council member, if you're making decisions about zoning the Wallingford Urban Village, that you are supposed to...
It sounds like you're rephrasing the question. Is that what you're going to do?
I'm repeating it because I wasn't sure if you...
I heard a stop in the sentence, and then I heard you say the law requires. And so
I'm saying, assume that the law requires. I'll just say assume the law requires.
Okay.
So assume that the law requires that the EIS contain information about the existing environment, land uses, and aesthetics. Let's just focus on aesthetics. For you to make those decisions, to be able to make those decisions, all right, about upzoning Wallingford. Does this paragraph on page 3163 provide the information as a council member about that is fully informed to understand what the existing aesthetic is in Wallingford with the single family zone?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I think you'd have to have more photographs taken more like the elevations that I showed in this exhibit so that people can get a sense of how relatively large things are, what the spacing is, and so forth.
And possibly the relationship of the single family to this area, you know, each, the context of how single family relates
each edge
to other parts of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And also maybe the age of the homes, 50 years or older, do you think, is that a different description than homes here?
50 years is basically mid-century,
yeah.
Right? So that's a very different kind of building than the majority of homes in our neighborhood.
So, which are about 100 years is what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hill.
Thank you.
We'll break and come back at 2:15.